You know, every day you learn something new, and I certainly learned a lot in what Rabbi Pankhurst had to say. But the greatest thing that I learned this morning, that I never knew before, is that I'm from Richmond. If you don't know, my name is Rabbi Strauss. I think I got that one right. And I actually live in South Surrey and run the Center for Judaism there. But aside doing that and previous to that, I've been a classroom teacher for 20 years, and Baruch Hashem, thank the Almighty, have Onen Hora 9 children from ages 8 months until 19 years. And I'd like to share with you some thoughts about little things that make a big difference. And the way to set the tone is with two anecdotes, this time from our family, but not me. We have a little boy, 4 years old. And 8 months ago, the Almighty blessed us with our 9th child. We brought the baby home, and the second youngest now, Benzin, he's absolutely ecstatic. And from then until this day, he just cannot hug and kiss the baby enough. But he learned very quickly that this baby cries. Why is he crying? So he says in Yiddish, we speak to our children in Yiddish, he says, the baby veins for Mashiach. The baby is crying for Mashiach. It blew us away. I mean, where did that come from? Another incident happened recently. We went to New York for Pesach, as we always do. My in-laws, for the last, I don't know, 5 or so years, do not live in Crown Heights. They live in Borough Park. Therefore, for the younger children, going to Crown Heights, which of course is the home of Lubavitch and where the Rebbe was for so many years and the previous Rebbe for 10 years, it's an excursion for them, and going to 770. As we're approaching Crown Heights, this little 4-year-old Benzin says something, and before I tell you what he says, you need to know the difference in appearance, the physical appearance, between Brooklyn and here. Vancouver is one of the most beautiful cities in the world. On Oak Street, you face north, you see the mountains, you see the water. Where we live on Shabbos, you can walk down to the beach and it's clean. People are dressed 10 months a year over there. Mountains, water, it's just gorgeous. People live in beautiful homes. And in Brooklyn, you have row houses or large houses that are 100 years old, and there they're not called, 75-year-old houses here, heritage homes. They're just old homes, tall, dark, old homes with the streets, whatever they are, with their own potholes and situations. So, from Borough Park to Crown Heights, we go through a neighborhood where a lot of people live there, and what shall I say, not the safest neighborhood, just use your imagination and you'll be right. We're approaching Crown Heights, and my 4-year-old says, in Yiddish again, he says, Crown Heights is Gan Eden, while the Rebbe is Helik. Crown Heights is paradise, because the Rebbe is holy. Again, we were just blown away. I mean, where did this come from? We didn't actually rehearse this. And in pondering about this, and thinking about the thoughts to share this morning, it occurs to me that attitudes and behaviors, when repeated often enough, create a certain aura in the home. That's the way things are around here. And when there's a certain aura and certain ideas and activities happen often enough, then such gems will emerge and give these nachas moments, which are so precious. So therefore, the subject, little things that make a big difference, in 3 areas: in thought, that is attitude, and in speech, and in deed. A number of years ago, I heard about an event that happened with a shaliach, an emissary to somewhere in the world that I've known for many years. He went to the Rebbe, and I believe this was in a private audience. He said to the Rebbe, I find I hit my children too often. Now, this individual was, or is, I should say, an educated for many years, and actually a respectable person in the world of Lubavitch. The Rebbe responded, the Hizbonenes Dav Zayin, the contemplation has to be that every child is a grandparent. And I'd like to share a little insight on this first point. And I would like to let you know that as these bullets are being shown on the screen, a printout of all of them is available for those who would like later on. So the first attitude, every child is a grandparent. Doing what my wife and I do in South Surrey, serving the Jews who live south of Richmond, one of the things that comes so strongly is that what we do impacts the next generation. Usually when people ask for an appointment with the rabbi, it's because of news that is not very good. And so often, the news that is not very good did not begin there. It began in the previous generation, or even the generation prior to that. And I can testify with complete detail of how issues go down the generations until five generations that I personally know about. Yes, if we were to ask ourselves what are some of our good characteristics and which of them do we see in our parents, looking back at our parents, it probably came from their parents. And therefore, ever since I heard this verse from the Rebbe, I can say that I live with this every day, and I hope you will too. Every child is a grandparent. Now, to raise our parenting to the next level, we really need to raise ourselves to the next level. And to clarify this particular point, I would like to introduce a third attitude also from the Rebbe. Earlier today, they showed the video, as they do every Sunday. A number of years ago, on one such video, we were showing it out in Surrey. I do not remember the exchange between the individual and the Rebbe, but the Rebbe said one word in English, one phrase in English, that again, it keeps on percolating in my own mind, and I share it with people all the time. And the Rebbe said these words in English: every living thing must grow. So therefore, let's put these attitudes together. If we would like to raise our parenting to the next level, then we ourselves need to raise ourselves to the next level. Consider refined speech. Refined speech not only teaches refined speech, it creates an aura in the home. That's the way things are about around here. That's what feels right. And that includes when speaking of people who have done something wrong to you. And what shall I say? That being a rabbi of a community, it happens once in a while that people do things that are not so nice, and you're tested. And that's where I have made a point specifically to point out to my children that there's a difference between what a person has done and the way we speak in our home. Refined behavior. Here's a great story. In preschools, as they often do, comes Friday, they have a Shabbos party. So in one school in New York, Shabbos party, and this one is going to be the mommy, this one is going to be the tati, this one is going to be the guest, and this is going to be the kindler, and they all get around the table. This is a school where everything is taught in Yiddish. So the teacher says to the little kid who's sitting there, he's the tati, and he says, okay, tati, fang on, tati, begin. So he sits down and he says, oh, you birkat ha-shverbo, boy, did I have a difficult week. mind behavior, it rubs off. And it goes down the generation. We heard from our past about honesty. Honesty. And we all know that we're all tempted in different places. We can fill in the blanks ourselves. But here's one other attribute that again creates a great aura in the home. Being contemplative before acting. And it's okay when there's a situation or a question and you pause and the child is waiting and you say, I'm thinking. Because that creates an aura that little things make a big difference. I don't just lash out all the time. I am contemplating. And that's the way things are around here. Another attitude in this regard. It's important, I believe, to find ways to let your children know that we ourselves seek to grow. Every living thing must grow. We're adults. And we're not God just yet. We also seek to grow. And another point, and this requires a little more articulation, especially as children get older. I would be delighted if you turn out much better than me. And if it's not articulated in some form, that particular message, I believe, doesn't really get there. So we've spoken about thoughts that impact. And now, let's talk about words that impact. When the previous Rebbe was 4 years old, he asked his father, the then fifth Rebbe, he asked him, why did the Almighty make us with two eyes? We have one mouth, one nose. Why two eyes? The Rebbe Rashab, the fifth Rebbe, answered him, do you know the difference between a shin and a sin? Incidentally, you should be aware that unlike in the regular school system where you learn to read it somewhere at the age 6, our sages teach us, and we practice this until this day, that we study Chumash at age 5, which means you're learning to read at age 4. Which we all know, all of us who do it, know that it absolutely works. So he was 4 years old. Do you know the difference between a shin and a sin? Two letters. The previous Rebbe, 4 years old, he says, yes. The shin has a dot on the right side. The sin has a dot on the left side. His father said, a Jew has two eyes, a right eye and a left eye. A right eye is the way you look at a sitter. It's the way you look at another Jew. The left eye, that's how you look at candies and toys. Now, what is the meaning of this story? Because we know that the reason we have two eyes is for depth perception. I happen to know a fellow who used to live here who lost sight in one eye, and one of his family members told me that he would sometimes pour sugar into the coffee and he'd miss the cup. He would go behind the cup. They didn't say anything to clean up after. Depth perception. So I heard an explanation of this story as follows. This story, Why Have Two Eyes, is about depth perception. But the element is the following. The fifth Rebbe, as a father, had a certain idea in his mind that he wanted to share with his son. And he was looking for an opportunity to attach this lesson to it and make it very real. And now is the perfect opportunity. Why do we have two eyes? Now is the opportunity to teach spiritual depth perception. Spiritual depth perception is, with your right eye you look at the sitter, with the right eye you look at another Jew, and with the left eye you look at candy and toys. Depth perception. Ever since hearing this explanation, In my own life, I have taken an idea and implemented it, which I'd like to share with you, using the following example. Every morning, I have the wonderful pleasure of driving from South Surrey to Hebrew Academy, take my kids to school, and then on most days to do the drive back. When doing that, we go through the tunnel. In the morning, they take the counterflow lane, in other words, the traffic goes the opposite direction, and they convert it so there's three lanes going north. On one fine day, a certain company put up a large electronic billboard, essentially a billboard that is like television without the sound. On that particular day, as we're driving towards the tunnel in full view of this screen, they're advertising a particular movie. The advertisement was not exactly according to our standards in our home. So I did something none of you should ever do, and my son is in the back. He may or may not remember this, but I remember this like the day. I turned around to my children and I said, "That's why we don't have television." Long pause. Then I said, "Imagine what goes through the heads of people who watch television every single day." You see, I had a message. In our home, we don't have television because we don't introduce into our home portrayals of behavior that we don't agree with. We just don't let it in. As our sages tell us, the mouth is not the thief. It is the opening in the wall that is the thief. So we just don't let it in. I wanted to share this idea, and at a split moment, split second, I saw the opportunity, having heard the explanation of the story from the Rebbe that we mentioned, and that's where we mentioned it. So I'd like to augment this a little bit in how to do this effectively in a way that I found effective. The first thing that we need to do is have clear ideas of right and wrong, which may sound pretty simple, but in today's day and age, with moral relativism, which is a daily staple of the halls of academia, we're not sure what's right, what's wrong, they say. What is one person's freedom fighter, is another person's terrorist, who knows, maybe, I'm not sure. We have to have a clear idea, right and wrong. The next thing is to formulate a concise way of expressing an idea. And then, two words, simplify and repeat. And then we get back to what we started with, seek occasions to make the point. And I'd like to share an example. Well, one example, actually, we said before, every living thing must grow. The Rebbe gave it to us right there on a silver platter. Every living thing must grow. But here is something, again, Rav Hach mentioned in the beginning of his talk about conveying to children, and I'll use my words now, thank God we are Jews. For example, we're walking home from shul. In our particular life, that's very easy because walking home from shul is just the next, it's the annex to the home, the shul. But if you're walking home from shul, in our case, it's driving to school usually, or from school, and you witness certain behavior that is aimless and clearly not the kind of behavior that you would consider for a civilized people. Something that unfortunately we see on the streets rather frequently. One comment. Thank God we are Jews. We are going to go home, and we're going to sit by the table as a family, and we're going to sing, and we're going to hear what you have to say in school. This is our lifestyle. Thank God we are Jews. The opposite side, that which is observable on the street, is clearly understood. Now I know people like to say these days, don't be judgmental. Well, I'd like to say that the Almighty gave us minds to assess and distinguish between meaningful and empty. Sitting in judgment is only God Himself. Ein don yichidi elo echot. But assessing and distinguishing between what is meaningful in our lives and what is empty, it is our duty. And with that simple phrase, Boruch Hashem Mizayim Yidin, thank God we are Jews, as we say it in the Siddur every morning, Ashreinu Matzev Kolkeinu. Sometimes we can hammer home a certain phrase and we think we might not get anywhere, and it has an impact. Here, there was something rather dramatic that I heard from a very dear friend of ours that we have known for many years from this general area. This is a woman from a family. In their home, there was absolutely nothing taught about Judaism. Whatever you can think of, it was not there, except for one phrase that her mother used to say. If you bring a non-Jewish boy home, I'm going to kill you. End quote. That's what she said. Those are the facts. The net result is she married a Jewish boy, which, when there's no Jewishness in the home, that's a feat. I'm pleased to report that this particular family has a lot of Jewishness in their home. Here is another one. This expression needs to be explained. I learned for 4 years in the yeshiva in a suburb of Paris called Brunois, and there was a very holy man who was the mashpia. He would teach chassidus and ideas of lifestyle and thought, the chassidic approach. He said this quote comes from the Alter Rebbe, from the first Chabad Rebbe. Now, this is my translation from Yiddish. In Yiddish, in apuskeit geitmen ala teurech. What does this mean? Well, 250 years ago, there was no plumbing. If there was a rundown home, it became a shack, a puskeit, it was empty. People would use it as an outhouse. But what the Alter Rebbe meant is that if our head, or our time, or our activity becomes empty, then it becomes an outhouse. Becomes an outhouse. We all know what that means, what we need to do about it, and what we need to communicate to our children. Again, simplify and repeat. Here's another one. Here is something that, in contemplating our own lifestyle as attempting to do what the Rebbe would like us to do in South Surrey, here is a thought that I feel can relate to everybody. When the Rebbe would come up with new campaigns, he would use expressions that sounded impossible and out of this world. For example, the Rebbe came with a campaign that we should make sure Jewish people have mezuzahs. He would say that we will not stop until every Jewish home in the world has mezuzahs on its doors. We will not tire until every Jewish child receives a Jewish education. And I thought to myself, this Rebbe is not prone to poetic license and just exaggeration. What did these words mean? I believe that it could be explained this way. If every Jewish person learns this idea that the Rebbe taught, if all you know is the letter Aleph, teach Aleph to another Jew. If every Jewish home became a beacon of light of Yiddishkeit, then yes, every Jew who goes to Shul Yom Kippur could influence another Jew, and eventually every Jew could in fact be reached. But for our purposes, here is something in speech which translates into action. Our home is not just our insulation from the world. Our home, we have a certain standard of Yiddishkeit, whatever that standard happens to be. Seek out somebody who is not yet warmed up to this standard and invite them into your home, and your home becomes a beacon of light. But here is the side benefit. Children in the home learn that every behavior is either a kiddush Hashem, either a sanctification of God's name, or God forbid a chil Hashem, the opposite. Even more, if this is what you make your home, and my children have heard this from me countless times, even cleaning the bathroom, you'll excuse me, becomes an exercise in holiness, in our home being a beacon of light, and you don't have to be designated as an emissary of the Lubavitcher Rebbe in order to do that. That's how every Jew can be reached. Here is something else that I share repeatedly with my children when I learn with them. This is, for those who are familiar with the Gemara, Yagato Masos HaTamin, this is a paraphrase of that idea. I repeat to my children, if it's easy, you learn a little. If it's hard, you learn a lot. Not only is this true, our sages say to us, that if somebody says, I worked hard and I didn't succeed, don't believe them. Or somebody says, I did not work hard and I succeeded, don't believe them. I worked hard and I succeeded, you believe them. And this is, the Gemara says right after that, it concerns the study of Torah. The Rebbe says a beautiful insight here. What happens if a person says, I didn't work hard, and you see they're successful, they know all of Torah, they know all of Shas, they know all of the Pesukim, they know everything, they say it was easy, how could you not believe them? Says the Rebbe, don't believe them that it was easy. Don't believe them that it was easy. Now, when you have this phrase, you simplify and repeat, and you simplify and repeat, here's what happens. Your child, who is above average, and learning is easy for them, they know, but that's not up to their standards, that they are higher than that, than easy learning. What about the child who is below average, and they are struggling? You have effectively eviscerated the excuse, quote, this is too hard for me. On the contrary, if it's hard, you learn a lot. And that's what our sages teach, that learning has to be on a level that to you is difficult. Try that for protecting a self-image of a child with slower abilities. Here are some other phrases that I use, the last ones of speech that impact. And this is situationally when children have an argument with each other once in a while, like three times a day at least. You can use this phrase at the right moment. Again, it's simplified and repeat. Do you want to be happy or do you want to be right? That's not manipulation, that's truth. Do you want to be happy or do you want to be right? And if you need to explain it, you explain it. But then, if you explain it enough times, you simply simplify and repeat. An alternate to that is, do you want to be right, but you want to do the right thing? It's not fair, I shouldn't clean up the supper table, even though mommy asked me. Do you want to be right or do you want to do the right thing? Let us move on now. To actions that impact. And that is about making certain little things prominent in our home. By now, we should have the idea, something that the previous Rebbe wrote about in a treatise called Klolei Chinuch V'Hadrocha. Long before Dr. Spock and which book are you reading, the previous Rebbe wrote a treatise on general principles of education and guidance. And the first thing he explains is that education about knowledge is not what we're speaking of. We're talking about raising a person. But there, I believe it's chapter 14, the previous Rebbe points out, you have a complex piece of machinery. Every every bolt, every screw makes a difference. Either it was Apollo 11 or Apollo 13, I do not recall, but those of us who are old enough to remember, that was not able to launch on a particular day because of a loose screw. If that is considered complex, what should we consider a person? And in that case, there are no little things, because every little thing makes a big difference. So here is where we take little things and we make them prominent. We teach our children to say blessings before and after food. So if they should know, we are now going to thank God for the food. When you do that often enough, there is an aura in the home, and there is an attitude that becomes, that's just how we are. We have food, and it comes from the Almighty, and we're thankful for it. There is one more, which I did not put on the overhead, but I'd like you to remember this, and this is, as we get on in life, it becomes more and more significant, but in the Siddurim, on page 6, there's a blessing that we say every morning. And we say it every time we use the bathroom, we thank God that our plumbing works. Not more than it needs to, and not less than it needs to. That's something that can be taught to children, that they should say that blessing is to thank God for those things. Here's another thing. Children come home from school. How was your day? Tell me something you learned in Judaic studies. May I suggest? Should be the first question. Judaic studies first. I know we live in a world where there's secular studies and people feel a tremendous need for it. But let's look at who we are, the Jewish people. For 2,000 years, we, and for some of us it's our own parents, such as myself and people of my age, who were ready to put down their lives so that they should keep the commandments, that they should study Torah. My father learned in an underground cheder in Uman, which was run by my father's father, for which he was sent to Siberia, and mind you, he did not desecrate Shabbos there. It caused him to lose an eye and other such things. So yes, Judaic studies are first. You don't have to give a speech. Simply by always asking first, not about math. You send a message. And you insist when children are doing homework, the Judaic homework is first. That's who we are. Here's another thing. Everyone can do. We have in our community a family that they bought a step called the Little Medrash says. The Medrash on the weekly parsha written for children, and they read it to their children when they go to sleep. Not only is it unbelievable how those children have grown over these 8 years that we've known them, but the parents themselves. The Medrashim were written by great sages. Just because it's written in simplified English doesn't mean it's juvenile. On the contrary. Bedtime reading. Instead of a book titled All About Me. Here is another thing. In Tanya, the Alter Rebbe explains that the Torah is God's wisdom. Again, simplify and repeat. Judaic studies first. This is God's wisdom. We're going to talk soon about other opportunities for sharing Torah with children. This is God's wisdom. Here's another thing. At the Shabbos table, words of Torah. Not only the notes that the children wrote, but create an event where children know it's an expectation from the youngest to the oldest. Our four-year-old knows that he wants to have something to say at the Shabbos table, because that's how things are in our home. And we go from the youngest to the oldest, and then, after all that, the father, in this case myself, has something to say at the table every time. In our home, we do something else, which is a little more difficult, but I share it with you anyway. In our home, every supper time is family time. We do not answer the phone unless, excuse me, we notice that it's one of our children from out of town, from Israel or Chicago or elsewhere. Since they are part of the family, they can interrupt the supper. It's not an interruption. It's all part of the family. And our children know that. But every supper table, someone has to say what we call a Yiddish word, a Jewish word. If the children have something, wonderful. If not, I prepare something. Every supper table, on occasion, not very often, it's hard for me to be there at supper. I will try to be there for this moment when we say Yiddish word, then I'll go back to what I'm doing. If I can't be there at all, I will specifically ask the children, make sure someone should say Yiddish word. Studying Torah with our children at least once a week cannot be overemphasized. And yes, we're all tired and our internal clocks put us to sleep on Shabbos afternoon. But this is the Jewish way. In the Torah, the teaching Torah to our children, it says, Veshinantam Levanecha, you should teach your children. The mitzvah, the duty is on ourselves. And that is how we do it. Here's another thing, especially in today's day and age, this is rather easy to do. And that is, instead of having only posters of people 6'8", whose morality not only on the hockey field, but elsewhere is animalistic, Jewish toys. Today on the internet, even if you're wealthy, you can go broke just buying all the Jewish toys that are available in every variation. There's really no excuse. Every cushy toy, every sophisticated toy, high-tech toy, low-tech, bib, t-shirt, you name it, it's all available. It creates the aura of Jewishness. And not only that, how about those kind of gifts for other Jewish families, regardless of their standing? There's something else that we do. This is something that I learned from another shliach who talked about this at the conference of Shluchim, International Conference of Shluchim in New York. In the Jewish calendar, we have many special days. But in the Chabad calendar, we have even more special days. Last week, for example, in 1835, Reb Shmuel, the fourth Rebbe, was born. So we have a Fabrengen. Well, where in South Surrey do you have a Fabrengen so often? What we do is at the supper table. And very often, and when we don't, because I've forgotten, I regret it, but when we can, what we do is like this. We'll put a white tablecloth over the supper table, and we'll light two candles. I'll take out wine for myself, say l'chaim, grapes for the children. And we'll have a Fabrengen. Now, if you ever come to Chabad, you know what a Fabrengen is. We have a Fabrengen. That doesn't cost money. All it takes is time for me to prepare what to say and to do it. One of the things that emerges from this and the combination of saying a Yiddish word at the supper table, now we have children who would like to say something, so I'm off the hook from preparing so often. And not only that, we have one of our children who wants to say so much. It's like the supper table is almost longer than the Shabbos meal. That's the way things are around here. Here's another thing. Over the years, I have taught many bar mitzvah boys. And one of the things I have learned is that in the regular Western home, people don't sing. They listen to rock and roll. So you get a bar mitzvah boy, and he's singing so flat, it makes a pancake look round. I would like to assure you, every single bar mitzvah boy, and I'm presently working with, after all these years, with my most difficult case in this department, and I still tell you, everybody can sing. Don't listen to the pejorative comments you heard when you were a child. You're not wearing diapers anymore. Don't listen to those comments either. Sing with your children. It creates joy in the home. It's the Jewish way. Learn Jewish songs. There's more CDs than you can afford of Jewish songs. Sing with your children at the Shabbos table. And when you sing at the Shabbos table, they sit there and sing with you. and this is something we don't have time to discuss, but one of my children, who I am positive has no clue what I am speaking about, that it is this particular child, and even probably my son in the back may not even know who I am talking about, but one of our children showed signs of not wanting to sing at all. I worked on it. How, if not for now? For months, little by little, because singing is so important. And now, you would never believe it, how much this particular child sings. Sing with your children. It brings joy into the home. We heard from Rabbi Pass. Our sages teach that mitzvahs that we do with joy, they have a lasting effect for generations, eternally. That's one of the ways of doing it. And finally, I'd like to share with you something that the fifth Rebbe said, and our Rebbe in 1943 made sure to include this in the daily calendar of contemplation, and that is, just like it is a duty to put on tefillin every single weekday, not my words, the Rebbe's words, the fifth Rebbe, just like it is incumbent upon men to put on tefillin every single weekday, it is similarly incumbent upon us to spend half an hour a day in contemplation of the education of our children. May I suggest that in consideration of all of which we have said today, which again, a review sheet is available for you to take later if you would like, in consideration of all of the above, this notion will come naturally. I will say again, not because this is special, but because it's an outgrowth of all of the above. There is almost not a day, that my wife and I are not in deep discussion about some facet of the education of our children. And then the Almighty sends us rewards. The Almighty sends us two rewards that I shared with you. He sent us a son who said, the baby is crying because Mashiach is not here yet. And the Almighty gave us a son who said, Crown Heights is paradise because the Rebbe is holy. That's how it happened. I hope it happens for all of us. Thank you.